Oh, thank you so much. So we're up to the Gemara here about Nachri, a guy who comes into the chatzar of a Jew and he's got chametz in his hand. So if you recall, we had various drashos and we tried to sift out what the principles of halacha are with regard to chametz of a guy in the Rishus of Yisrael. We came to the following conclusion: that if the Jew takes upon himself achrayus and he's responsible for the chametz of a guy, it means that if the chametz is destroyed or lost, he has to replace it, then he's liable for the violation of Bali Rabbi Motzi. If, on the other hand, and this is the case that we're addressing now, the guy on his own initiative comes into the chutz of Israel and he's holding on to chametz, so the Jew, what happens? The Jew has to tell him, get out of here, I don't want your chametz in my reshus. Does he have to confiscate the chametz and set it to the fire, to the torch? No. There's no violation of Bali Rabbi Motzi because the Jew has not accepted upon himself any achrayus. And even though you might have argued, well, okay, forget about Bali Rabbi Motzi, but maybe he'll come to eat the chametz of a guy. The answer is the guy wants his chametz. He's not giving it to you as a gift, and he's going to take his chametz and then go. So there's no fear that you're going to steal the chametz of a guy and start eating it. And as far as Bali Rabbi Motz is concerned, you don't own the chametz. You didn't take any responsibility for the chametz, and therefore, in that case, you're not culpable for Bali Rabbi Motz. However, if it was a pikadon means that the Jew accepted upon himself achrayus. Yesterday we discussed at great length three levels of achrayus, but whatever level it is, he accepted upon himself responsibility that if the chametz is lost or destroyed, he will replace it. Then the Jew is considered like a part owner over the chametz, and he's in violation of Bali Rabbi Motz. Now, at the end of this discussion, we have a case of yiched lo bayis. Now, what does yiched lo bayis mean? So it could mean one of two things. Either it could mean that when the guy comes into your reshus with his chametz, you say to him, look, find yourself a place somewhere in my house. You know, the house is yours, so to speak. You know, find yourself a corner and lock it up, and I don't want any responsibility for your chametz. An alternative interpretation of yiched lo bayis would be where the Jew says, you know what, this area of the house is designated for you. You want to keep your chametz there, I'll give you a corner of 4x4 cubits here in the northwestern part of my salon, and that's where you'll put your chametz. And the Braisa says the following: yiched lo bayis ein zokuk levayr, which means that once the Jew designates an area in his house and he allows the chametz of the guy, he allows the guy to put his chametz there in that area, then the Jew doesn't have to worry about Bali Rabbi Motzei. He didn't accept a chrayus, it's not his problem, the chametz belongs to the guy. Ein zokuk levayra, the Jew has no responsibility. The problem is the last three words in the braisa. And here we have machlokas between Rav Papa and Rav Ashi. The last three words of the braisa are very confusing. It says, Shenemar lo yimotze. Now, usually when you see a Shenemar, it's going on the very last thing. You made a statement and then you say Shenemar. The Shenemar is meant to form the biblical basis or the source for that last halacha that you quoted. sometimes we, as Rav Papa is going to do now, we're going to say, no, that last three words goes back to something earlier in the Braisa. But that's not the usual way we read, the normal way we read a Braisa. So the Braisa says, Yichel Ovayis, Ein Zokuk Levayir, Shenemar Lo Yimotze. Now the Shelo Yimotze quote here is very problematic, because the Shelo Yimotze means that the Torah left out the word Lecha, and we use the Pasuk Shelo Lo Yimotze as a Chumrah. In fact, if you recall, back on Daf Hayomid Beis, the entire halacha of what's called Pikdono Shel Nachrim, that I'm responsible for the chametz of a guy, and therefore I violate by your moment, that was derived from the Pasuk Lo Yimotze. So Lo Yimotze is telling me Lesar, not Lahatir. So how can you then tell me, well, Yichel Lo Bayis Ein Zokuk Levayir, you don't have to get rid of the chametz. Why? Shenemar Lo Yimotze. And that's what the Gemara asks. My Kamar. So let's just see if everybody has the place. This is where we got up to yesterday. My Ka'omar. Oh, let's see. If we're counting up, how do we do this? If you have the classical Shas, then it's in between Tosis Yiched Lo Bayis and Tosis Kofa Lov Kli. And the first word in the line is Levayer. Okay, and then if you move in towards the left, it says My Ka'omar. Omar Av Papa, Aresha Koi. That you shouldn't read it, well, because you set up a place and you designated a place in the bayis, therefore you don't have to get rid of it because it says Shenemar Lo Yimotze. No, the Shenemar Lo Yimotze goes back to the Reisha. What was the Reisha? The Reisha was the case where Hifkido Etzlo Zokuk Levayir, that if the Jew accepted upon himself responsibility, that's called a Pikadon Shel Nachri, then the Jew is responsible for Bayura Bayimotze as well. He's liable, he violates it. Shenemar Lo Yimotze, and now the Lo Yimotze is derived as a Chumra. So, Hachi Kamar, Hefkidu Etzlo, if the Jew accepted the Pikadon with all the responsibility thereof, is Zokuk Levayir, has to destroy the Chomet, Shenemar Lo Yimotze, the Torah says Lo Yimotze as a flat rule, absolute, with no exception, whether it's low or not low, we leave out the word low. But again, you know, even though we can empathize with Rav Papa, and we feel very secure about the fact that Lo Yimotze is now telling us a Chumrah, and it's justifying why, you know, the Jew is now responsible for Bal Yerov Bayimotze because he took responsibility for the chametz of a guy, but nevertheless, it's a little bit odd that the Braisa left the punchline of Shenemar Lo Yimotze till the end, after it told you that in the case of Yichel Lo Bayis, he doesn't have to get rid of the chametz. Ravashi Amar Liolam HaSeifakoy, Ravashi pushes the envelope on reading the Braisa the way it seems to be read, you know, on first reading. V'alchi kamar yichel lo bayis ein zok levayir shenemar lo yimotze bibateichem. We have to add one word to the Braisa, which is the next word in the pasuk. The Braisa quotes only the first two words in the pasuk, but it really meant to quote the third word in the pasuk is bibateichem. Bibateichem means that you're in violation of possessing chametz in your house, but once you did a yichel lo bayis and you said to him, you know what, this is your house, you know, this little corner, the northwestern corner of 4 cubits on 4 cubits, that's yours. At that point, it's no longer bibateichem, it's no longer your house. And what we're about to embark upon is an entire sugya. If I tell you you could use part of my house, does that make it your house? It's no longer my house just because I told you can, you know, you come into my house and you have a big package. So I say, you know, put the package down over there in that corner. So does that mean that corner becomes yours? But it seems from this Rav Ashi's interpretation of the Braisa, that's exactly what's going on over here. Then when does the Torah prohibit you from owning chametz? That's because it's bibateichem. But if you told the guy to put his chametz over there in that corner, that's no longer bateichem. Now that bais belongs to the guy. Veha lavdi dehu. And this house, or at least this section of the house, is no longer yours. And therefore it's mutter, it's not bibateichem. You didn't violate Lo Yimotze bibateichem. The Nachri, the guy, kika ma'ayl, when he goes inside, ma'ayl is to go up, lebeise denafshe ka'ayl, he's going up to his own house. Beisa denafshe, his own house. And right away the Gemara says, lememra, does this mean that schirus kanya? So here I want you to highlight these two words, schirus kanya, because that's the sugya that we want to take up right now. Schiris means if I give you a part or entire house for your use, We call it rental, but the word rental here is not an accurate translation of the word schirus, because every rental agreement implies that you pay me for rental. I think. Again, I have to look up in the dictionaries here. What's the official dictionary in Canada, by the way? Is there in America, I think it's Merriam-Webster. Is that still, am I dating myself here? Or Webster? What? I guess every country has its official dictionary.
Wikipedia.
Yeah, Wikipedia, right? So if you look up the word rental, I guess you assume there's an implicit fee that you pay. Here, there's no indication that the guy is paying him to allow him to deposit his chometz in a certain corner. He just says, you know what, that corner is designated for your bottle of whiskey. David?
We said yesterday that the shoel, the borrow, is like the owner. So maybe in this case he's borrowing it, so he's the owner temporarily.
Excellent. And that's what I think the Gemara means by schirus, that schirus is not necessarily what we call rental, where you pay money for it. Schirus requires an official maisa kinyan. You have to sign a document, or you have to do a kinyan chazaka. No, that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is when I designate something, if I'm the owner, for your use, and you could benefit from that, it's considered that you have a kind of ownership. Again, you know, the concept of bialus, of ownership in halacha, is a very, you know, it's a very subtle concept. It goes from one extreme to the other with many different layers and nuances of differences in between. But this is kind of like an ownership. And the ownership is a result of the fact that this house is now designated for your use, meaning the Jew says to the guy, you can enjoy the benefits of my house, or again, one corner of my house. That itself gives you rights to use that house or that part of the house, and those rights to benefit from the house give the guy a kind of an ownership. And now what we're going to study is a sugya in Masechet Avodah Zarah, and we're going to try to prove one way or the other, does the fact that I give the guy rights to use my house, does that make it as if it's his house, he could benefit from it? And the nafka mina is going to be, as far as the law of renting homes to a guy in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz Laretz. Now here's the deal. You can rent your house to anyone. The halacha doesn't enchain you, you know, and enjoin you from rental agreements with goyim. The problem is, and this is a very severe problem in Eretz Yisrael, and at the time when goyim were all idol worshippers, that the Torah says, "V'lo tavi to'eva al toch beisecha." That's a pasuk in Dvarim Perek Zayin. And the Torah enjoins us from bringing to'eva, abominations, which here is a reference to idols, into our house. And the Chachamim were very nervous about a Jew renting out his house to a goy, specifically in Eretz Yisrael, because if the guy brings his idols into your house, then you violate, maybe not on a Doraisa level, but even on a but at least on a Drabana level, lo savi to evil tof beisach. Meaning, you yourself, the Jew, you didn't bring the idol into your house. So literally, what do I mean? Lo tavi, don't bring to evil tof beisach. You didn't bring the idol into your house. But since you facilitated the guy bringing his idols in the house, if he rents your house, you know, the first thing he does, he puts down his little geshko with his little idol, and he worships it. So then it's as if you brought that idol into your house. And there's a specific prohibition against this in Eretz Yisrael. So let's learn a little bit more about this by reading the Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Avodah Zarah Asnan. The Mishnah says, "Af b'mokom sha'amru lahaskir." Even in a case where they allowed you, the Chachamim allowed you to rent out your house to a guy, and that's in Chutz Laretz. We'll soon see that in Eretz Yisrael it's an absolutely forbidden. So in other words, they allowed you to rent out your house to a guy, and that's in Chutz Laretz. Lo lebeis dira amru. The Gemara is saying now that even in Chutz Laretz, we're not allowed to, again, Rabos, I don't want anyone walking out of here with a misimpression about halacha lemaisa, because this has to do with the period of time where the goyim were worshipping idols. Whether that applies today or not, if you'd like, we can open up a Shulchan Aruch Yoredei and research that, but try to put your brain into an abstract world right now. You know, conceptually, we're not talking about paskening halachas here, about renting homes to goyim in chutzlos. But according to the Mishnah, if there's reason to believe that the goy is going to bring in his idols into the house that belongs to a Jew, it's being rented to a goy, then it's prohibited. And therefore, when there was a green light, when there was permission offered and granted to a Jew to rent out his house in Chutz Laaretz to a goy, lola beis dira amru, mipnei shem mechnisim litocho avodah zara. And Rashi explains that you cannot rent it out to a goy as a domicile for purpose of living there, because he's going to bring in his idols in there, but rather you could rent it out for other purposes. Let's say, for example, you know, there's an area which can be used to house animals, let's say. So the goy is going to bring in his animals there. Now, wait a second. The whole problem of renting a house, a Jew renting a house to a goy as a beis dira, is the violation of lo tovi toevel tov beis secha. But the pasuk says beis secha, so why should there be any issue here in the case of rental? You're renting it. Now, we just finished saying that in chametz, if you give rental rights, meaning usage rights, to a goy for in your house for chametz, you don't violate batechem, right? That was Rav Ashi's whole interpretation of the Braisa, that this is not called batechem. Why? Says the Gemara, because chiris kanya, meaning it's now considered the goy's house. Now, if it's considered the goy's house, if you enter into a rental agreement with a goy, and then he brings in his avodah zara, well, he's bringing it into his house. This is very far from the from violating the prohibition of Tovi Toich El Toch Beisecha. It's not Beisecha. If you're going to maintain the position that Tzchiris Kanya, and that's why I don't violate Bali Rabbi Motze, it's not Bibatechem. When I let the guy use my house, is then here also, in the case of Avodah Zarah, Kikoma Ayil, when the guy goes into my house, which I've given him rights to use, and he's living there with his family, and he brings in his getchkes, his idols, is Lebesei Dinafshik Ayil. He's going into his own house. And therefore there's no violation of L'Toch Beit Secha. So I will say it's fascinating. We have two violations in the Torah, both of which are contingent upon Beit Secha, upon bringing something into your house. One is lo yimatzei bibateichem in chametz, and the other is to'ev al toch beitecha in avodah zarah. And we should have an absolute equation between the two. That's what the Gemara assumes at this point. Later the Gemara is going to distinguish. But right now at batecha in avodah zarah is the same as batechem in chametz u'matzah in bal yiroah. And if you're telling me that by allowing the guy to use your house for his chametz, it's no longer considered lo yimatzei bibateichem, meaning that tzchiris kanya, the fact that he has rights to use it, makes it into his house, and therefore I circumvent the violation of Al-Yirah Bayimatzei, so too I should be able to circumvent the iser of lo savi to'ev al toch beisecha by telling the guy, you know what, this house is your house, meaning you can use it and you can live there, do whatever you want. So it's no longer El Toch Beisecha, just like in the case of Chavez, it's no longer Bivatechem. Why should the Chachamim tell me that I'm not allowed to rent my house to a guy for domicile purposes when he's going into his own house and not into my house? And at this point, the Gemara is now going to set up what we call Tzvei Dinim, two different halachas. Even though in both contexts, whether it's chametz or toeva, it always says batechem or batecha, they're two fundamentally different din. Shiny hacha, chametz is different. Why? When I designate a place in my house for the guy's chametz, the afkei rachmana b'loshen lo yimatze. It doesn't say v'lo tovi chametz bibatechem or libatechem. It says lo yimatze. Now, the Gemara interprets lo yimatze on a whole different level. You know, here's where we have a discrepancy between what I call the literal translation of words from Lashon Kodesh into English or any other language and the more conceptual translation of a pasuk based on Torah Shebal Peh. You and I might have said Lo Yimatze means it can't exist, it can't be found, it can't be in the airspace of my house. No, no, no. Chazal say Lo Yimatze means Matsui Biyodcha. Matsui Biyodcha means that you have total free access to it. Matsui Biyodcha. It's totally accessible to you. If you designate an area in your house for the guy and you say to John Paul Jones, here, this closet is for you. You enjoy the benefit of the closet. Get yourself a key or make a copy of the key. Lock it up. I'm not going to go near it. You have no fears. That's not Matsui Biyodcha. In other words, the issue here is not whether it's Batechem, meaning is it your house or not your house. And in fact, I could say that Skiris Lo Kanya, it still remains my house, that technically the Jew owns the house, and that's why he's going to have a problem of Lo Tovi Teuevel Tef Beisech with regard to Avodah Zarah. But even though it's my house, I still don't violate Bal Yerah Bal Yimotze, because the Batechem in Bal Yerah Bal Yimotze is Lo Yimotze, which means Matsui Biyadcha. And once I tell the guy, this is your area, it's designated for you, and I'm excluded from it, then even if you don't own that area, it's really technically my bias, but nevertheless, it's not a violation of Lo Yimatze, because it's not what? Yeah. Matze Biyadcha. The Afkei Rachmana B'loshen Lo Yimatze. Had the Torah said, Lo Yavi Bibatechem, then if the chametz is in my bias, I don't care if the guy brought it in or the pigeons brought it in, whatever it is, it's matzi, it's bala beisecha, it came into my house. And in the case of Avodah Zarah, it says, Lo tavi to'eval beitecha. You know, we always think that chametz is the worst thing in the world. Worst thing in the world is chametz on Pesach, because chametz on Pesach is an Issa Karis. And Tosfos says at the beginning of the Masechta that the Chacham made this whole enterprise called Bedikas Chametz so that there won't be chametz in your house. It's the worst thing in the world. But I have news for you, Rav Osai. There's something that's even worse in your house than a piece of chametz. As good as it looks and it smells, and that's what? Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is intolerable. Lo tavi to'eval beitecha. Even if it's not matzi l'cha, because after all, you know, you signed an agreement with this guy, and he has schiris rights. You know, you gave him, and he acquired rights to use your house. Oh, no. It's still beisecha. It's still your house. His schiris is not going to remove your ownership of the house. And if it doesn't remove your ownership of the house, there is an idol in your house. And that's intolerable. Yotza Zeh, in the case of Yichto Nochri, as far as Lo Yimatze is concerned, in Chametz, Eino Matzu Biyotcha, but that's not going to help and mitigate the violation of Lo Tavi Toevel Beitecha. Lo Tavi means it's in your bias, even if you gave the guy rights to live there, his wife is there, his children are there, you don't go there, you never open the door, you know, you give him total privacy, but nevertheless it's your house, and you have an idol in your house, and that's prohibited. Okay, Rabos, so we're ready to start a new sugya. And the question the Gemara addresses now in this sugya is, what happens if you made a bedika, you did everything you had to do, but lo and behold, you missed it, and you messed up a little bit, and you find a piece of chametz. Now, this issue divides up into two subcategories. Number one, you found the piece of chametz on Yontif. Number two, you found the piece of chametz on Cholo Shalmoed. Now, if you found the piece of chametz on Cholo Shalmoed, then what do you do with it? Burn it on the spot. Get rid of it. But on Yontif, it's a lot more complicated. We've discussed this earlier on Daf Hey, in the context of Rabbi Akiva, Hey Amid Beis, that Havara Le Chalek Yotzis, which means that Havara is one of the 39 molachos that are prohibited on Yontif. Even though I get some benefit from burning chametz on Pesach, on Yontif itself, but that's not enough to permit the violation of Havara, of burning chametz on Pesach. Om Rav Yudha Marav HaMotzi chametz v'beis o b'yontif is kofe olav es hakli. Now, if you take a look at Just 1 second. Is it in Rashi or only in Tosfos? Just 1 second. Oh, look at Rashi. Kofe olav es hakli. And if you're counting up from the bottom of the page, it's about, I'd say, 12 lines up from the bottom of the page. If you're counting up from the skinny lines, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up from the skinny lines. Now, what I was anticipating here in this Rashi is not what I find in this Rashi. I was anticipating Rashi's going to tell me, Kofa olav es hakli, because you can't destroy chametz on Pesach because it's a violation of one of the 39 malachas. That's not what Rashi's bothered about. Now, if you take a look at the first five words in Rashi, and I'm going to quiz you on this, which of those five words should be highlighted as the subject of this Rashi? And Rashi's going to tell you why you can't get rid of this chametz. Little Tule. Now, what is that called in our language?
Muktzah.
Exactly. Rashi's introducing here the Isur Muktzah. Rashi's completely circumventing what I would call an Isur Malacha. Maybe Rashi holds that we have to cover our bases if Havara Lelav Yotzis, which means only Osir on Shabbos and not on Yontif, or if we hold that you can get rid of chametz without burning it, which is the Shita of the Chachamim in the Mishnah at the beginning of the second Perkash Pasasa B'chol Dover, you don't have to burn the chametz. Or perhaps Rashi wants to cover his bases if we hold Mitoch. And if you happen to recall, we spoke about Mitoch, that if Havara as a Meleches Ochel Nefesh can be implemented for the sake of cooking, then you can implement that Melacha for the sake of anything that's Litzorach Hayom, for the need of the day, and certainly getting rid of Chametz is Litzorach Hayom. So Rashi therefore doesn't want to go down what I call Berzon's path and interpret it as referring to a malacha. Forget about a malacha. I can live with that. I can get rid of the chametz and I have no problem. No violation of malacha's yontif. But how do I get rid of the chametz? I got to pick it up and burn it. Well, the moment I pick it up, says Rashi, I violate the Isur of Tiltul, because I'm not allowed to move things on Yontif, and on Shabbos as well, but on Yontif in this case, which have no purpose for me. Now, usually a foodstuff is your classical case of something that's not muktzah, but if the food is inedible, you know, this might apply to raw meat, for example. Again, you know, raw fish everybody eats, so I don't eat it, but it's supposed to be a delicacy these days. You know, sushi, they have a whole series of sushi places in Israel now, and they have, of course, it started in America, I assume. It starts in America. Anyway, but raw meat, you know, that's already, and anything else that's inedible. I mean, the whole question of what do you do with shirayim on the table, you know, how do you get rid of, you know, pieces of shell and different things, you know. In the case of chametz, it could be the most beautiful piece of chametz in the world. If I offered it to my goyish neighbor, but can't because it's tosfos, no, but he would love it, and it's certainly edible. But nevertheless, it's inedible. Why is it inedible? Because al pi halacha, it's inedible. The Torah tells me I'm not allowed to eat chametz. And that makes it into an object that's not royal achila. If it's not royal achila, then there's an isur tiltul. So Rashi says we're in a bind over here. There's an Isur Tiltul that'll violate, right? And therefore we can't get rid of this chametz. You know what? What's the other option here? You know, Kofal of us a kli. Very nice. You're going to cover it with a kli. What purpose does that serve? Does that take it out of my rishus? It's no longer mine?
You don't see it.
Oh, you're right.
So what? We've said that Balyimotze means even Yakmin, you know, even if it's subterranean, you lock it up under the earth. So certainly Kofalav is a Kli. That's not acceptable. The only thing you could do, it could be a memory device. You know what I mean by memory? It's like a flag. You know, if I want to take this chametz and eat it, chas v'shalom, because the whole year round I eat chametz, so I might mistakenly eat it. So then I see, wait a minute, it's covered with a kli. Okay, that's fine. But what about Bayiro Bayimotze? So Rashi pulls the old bittel out of the pocket. He says, Umiyu, don't think that Bayiro, that he's going to violate Bayiro. Bayiro lo avar. He does not violate Bal Yiroh. Da batle belibe me esmo. So Rashi is saying he covered his bases as far as Bittul is concerned. You'll say maybe he didn't do Bittul, he only did Bedika, but the Gemara is going to say later on, that's a sugya on daf vav beis, habodek tzarch shivata belibo. So he's a good Jew, and he fulfilled his requirements. He did both Bittul, both Bedika and Bittul. He covered his bases as far as Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh is concerned, but he has another serious problem now. Not Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh, but rather Shem Yovel Liochlo. El Mishum Shalo Yishkach Viochlenu, since we're afraid that he might forget himself and eat it, Tzarech Kfias Kli. So again, what problem does not have to be solved and would not be solved by Kofel Ovis HaKli, and what problem would be solved by Kofel Ovis HaKli? Can anybody answer that for me? David?
What's solved by Bal Yiroh
would not be solved by Kofel Ovis HaKli, but there is no problem. Why is there no problem? Because he was Mevatel Ischom. What problem is there? Shema Yishkach? V'yochlenu, he might come to eat it. That problem could be addressed and solved by Kofel Ovis HaKli. David?
If he didn't move it, just took a match and burned it, would that still be Mevatel?
Excellent, excellent question. So that's going to be part of what Tosfos is raising here in Kofel Ovis HaKli. But let me just give you, if you don't mind, the shortcut. The shortcut is that muktzah, tiltul muktzah, is not the action of moving the Kli, but causing the Kli to be moved. If you cause the Kli to change its position, that itself is a violation of tiltul muktzah. And therefore, in the case of burning the chametz, again, I'm not sure exactly how you'd engineer this, because you might blow your house down, but if even if, let's say, you could somehow, zap it in a way, put some metal underneath, asbestos, I don't know what, and nevertheless, that would be a violation of tiltul muktzah. Now, Tosfos has another problem, in addition to your problem, David. We have another principle of muktzah that's really problematic here in our context of Kofel Ovis HaKli. That's called Ein Kli Nital El L'Davar Nital. In other words, if this object is muktzah, not only am I enjoined from moving this object, or as we said before, causing, I'm not allowed to move another object which is not muktzah for the benefit of this object. So that if this object, let's say, were a classical muktzah, let's say, I don't know, it's a carcass of an animal, right? An animal died and its flesh is muktzah. And I want to take a kli, which is not muktzah, and use it to cover the animal. Let's say I take a bag and a garment and I want to cover it over because it looks really disgusting. That's already a violation of another isur, which is called ein kli nital el l'davar nital. You're only allowed to move one kli for the sake of another kli that could itself be moved. So if I can move this, then I can move this for the sake of that. But I can't move this for the sake of that if that's also betilta. And Tosfos doesn't understand how I can take a kli and cover over chametz, because then I'm violating the principle of ein kli nital, because I'm taking a kli that's not aser betiltul for the sake, and moving it for the sake of a kli that's also of something that's aser betiltul. So Tosfos says afagav to ikaman yomer perkira ein kli nital adovra nital ikali ukve bitzach makomo inami hachi shari mishum de dilma asila michle. So Tosfos offers two answers. Either the only way you can pull this off is if you have another purpose in mind. Let's say, for example, you're moving this right. Here's your bowl that you want to put over the chametz. So Tosfos in his first answer he says that tzarech makomo. Right? Normally, you can't move something that's not movable. When I say not movable, I mean not halakhically movable, unless you need the makom. Now, again, when he says you need the makom, he's not talking about moving muktzah. He's talking about moving a kli. So the kli itself is not muktzah. He wants to take the kli, the bowl, and cover over the chametz.
Maybe he needs to sit on top of the kli over the chametz. Maybe that's why he needs that space.
Right. So he needs the space. And when you need the space, you're allowed to move something that comes under what's called the Iser Tiltul Kelim. Again, in muktzah, there's no heter of moving muktzah. It's talking about komo. But we're not talking about moving muktzah. He's talking about a bowl. A bowl is not muktzah. Just you're not allowed to move the bowl as an Iser Tiltul, because you're moving it for the sake of muktzah. But that's only an Iser Tiltul. And when it comes to an Iser Tiltul on Shabbos, that's mutul tzarek, gufo tzarek makomo. The other answer of Tosfos is that they were matir they permitted this a violation of this isur for the greater good of Shema Yomel Liachlo. Because obviously, if we're weighing the two, if you come chashur the chametz, you violated isur kares. That's a lot more severe than violating the isur ein kli mital el tzorach dovranita. Now, all this is on Yontif. On Chol HaMoed we have no muktzah, so you just take the chametz and you get rid of it. Okay. Now, Rabosai, why are we afraid that a person might, if he finds chametz, might come to eat that chametz? I mean, are we dealing with a total, you know, a total ignoramus? I mean, he doesn't know an aleph from a beis.
If it's in a form where he doesn't recognize it as chametz.
No, I'm talking about a real McCoy piece of chametz. Why are we afraid that he might come to eat?
Because it's rugel.
Excellent. And you know what? That's. I just want to get the language down. Do you remember Usher, the language for that? That's called lo bidile mine.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Okay, this is a very important principle. We saw it, if you remember, back in the first Tosfos. Again, I don't want you to lose your place on that vav, but if you quickly rewind to that bezam and aleph. And Tosfos wants to understand why chametz is different than all other isurim. You know, we never found bedikas, you know, yayin lenazir or basa machala. And Tosfos says, just one second. Lo bedilimine inche. There it is. You see where the first line of the Mishnah is? If you go straight across from that Mishnah. Again, not the word "r," but the first line in the Mishnah. Then you go up one line a little bit. He says, "V'lo bedili mine." Okay, lo bedili mine. So again, chametz is very unique because we eat chametz the whole year round, right? 359 days or whatever it is out of the year. So therefore, since he's so used to eating chametz, lo bedili, bedili nivdal. Nivdal means to separate yourself. He doesn't separate himself from chametz the whole year round. So when he finds a piece of chametz in his house on Pesach, we got to really get nervous about that because he might come to eat it. That's called lo bedili mine. And I emphasize this because of the next line in the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. I'm sorry, Amar Rava. But im shel hegdesh hu eino tzarech. What does this mean? If, let's say, a person, you know, that like, you remember there's something called a karban toda? So the Karban Toda has to be accompanied by 40 lechamim, right? Ten, if I'm not mistaken, 30 of...
10 chametz.
Yeah, right, 30 of matz and 10 chametz. So he took chametz and he was magdishit for Kedushas Mizbeach. There's also something called Kedushas Berek HaBayis where I designate something for Hegdesh as ownership of Hegdesh, meaning as a chefetz shel mamon. You know, it's worth something. So in any event, he has a piece of chametz that's hegdesh. Says Rava, eino tzarech. There's no need to cover the hegdesh, which means we're not afraid that what? They'll eat that chametz. Again, it's a beautiful piece of chametz, Jerry. We don't have to say it's a fashtukin, a piece of chametz, or it's concealed, or any of that stuff. But yet, he's not going to eat it. Why isn't he going to eat it? Says the Gemara, my timer, because Mivdal Bedili Mine, this is the flip side of what we wrote on the blackboard of Lo Bedili Mine. Now this is fascinating. You can have two pieces of chametz on the table. They look identical. One of them you have to cover, and the other you don't even have to bother covering if you find it on Yontif of Pesach. The one that you don't have to bother covering, says Rava, is Hegdesh. Lo bedili mine inche is applicable only to chametz of chulin, but in the case of chametz shel hegdesh, we apply the principle of mivdel bedili mine. It means the whole year round, he would be very careful not to eat this piece of chametz because it's hegdesh, and it almost has like a name tag on it, and it says I am hegdesh, and stay away from me. The whole year round, he stays away from this chametz. It has a new status. Rabosai, I believe. I don't want to influence you but with my own prejudices, but that this Gemara could not be understood on a psychological level. This is a halachic legal category of you know, it's whether we say mivdal b'dili mine or lo b'dili mine. You know, you want to tell me there's a difference between chametz, which is mutter the whole year round, and so forth. You know, I can understand it on a psychological level, but then you tell me about this piece of chametz, which looks identical, but it's hegdesh. All of a sudden, it's mivdal b'dili mine. I find myself being kind of resisting and being uncomfortable about this Gemara on a psychological level. I think we're dealing with halachic categories. And when do we say Kofa Lovis HaKli? And according to Tosfos in his second shot, that we're going to allow you to do something that normally we would not allow you to do for the sake of Muktzah. We don't allow you to move a Kli. We're going to allow this to you because of a certain category. It's I would call it a shame isur, if you will. Shame means a category. So the category here is chametz. But if you add another category of isur to the chametz, then on top of it being chametz, it has another category of isur. Do you follow what I mean? It's this is the paradox. By adding another category, I end up with a kula. I become more lenient because now I change the essence of that isur. It's no longer pure chametz. It now becomes hegdesh, which generates its own Isur. Had it not been Pesach, it would be also the whole year round. That's called lo bedilim in ancient. So basically the final upshot of this entire sugya is kofa lovas hakli in the case where all I have is a shem chametz, and in the case where I have something other than a shem chametz, a different shem Isur, which means an Isur that applies the whole year round, that new shem Isur, which is the old shem Isur that applies the whole year round, that removes the shem chametz as far as the requirement of kofa lovas hakli. Okay. Now we move on to another question. What happens in the case of chametz shel goy? Now you and I remember that if I accept a achrayus and I'm responsible for the chametz, if it belongs to a goy, then I'm in violation of ayirah b'yimotzeh. But let's say I don't accept any achrayus, correct? So I'm allowed to have the chametz of a goy in my reshus. Well, does this chametz have another shame isur? Is it like hegdesh? Meaning, in the case of pure chametz, we said kofa lovas hakli. We're afraid shem yishkach v'yochlenu. So even if the guy left his chametz in my reshus and I'm not responsible because of bal yirah b'yimotzeh, but what about the shem yishkach v'yochlenu? It's not like the case of hegdesh, the rabbi's case where we add another shame isur. The shame isur here is purely chametz. So what do we do in this case? Om Rabbi Yudom Arav, Chametz, Chemtzo Shal Nochri, Oselo Mechitza Asorat Tfachim, Mishum Heker. He's got to separate, you know, sort of like build a fence around this Chametz that's at least 10 Tfachim high, and that creates a Heker. Heker means that's going to remind him that this is, you know, stay away, you know, keep off the grass kind of sign. Now, why not just put a kli on top of the chametz? You know, we just said before that if you find your own chametz on Pesach, then all you have to do, because you can't move it, it's muktzah, but all you have to do is cover it with a bowl. Why not cover this chametz shel goy if you're worried that the Jew might come to eat it, cover it with a bowl? No, says Rabbi Yudam Rav, that's not enough. Why? Because he's got to put up a mechitza. He's got to do something so much more profound. Oh. So Rashi, in order to get out of this problem, tells us the following. That whereas the sugi before adds the word b'yom tov, if you go back to Rabbi Yudam Arav, Hamotzi Chometz b'beso, he adds the two words b'yom tov. Here, the same Rabbi Yudam Arav says, chemtzo shel nochri, and it doesn't say b'yom tov. So therefore, we're talking even about Rabbo say what? Not Yonta B'chol HaMoed. If it's Chol HaMoed, then we don't have to fall back to this low level of Heker, meaning the nitty-gritty level of Heker of Kofa Lovas HaKli. We can do something much more profound. And what's more profound? To build a Mechitza. So Rabbo say, this is going to shed a light on the previous sugya. What happens if you find chametz on Pesach? So we said, kofa lovas hakli. Wait a minute. Why not do something more profound? And why not create a mechitza? The answer is, we're not allowed to create a mechitza on Yontif.
Rashi says we're talking about arbasa.
Oh, but if it's arbasa, or if it's chol hamoed, then you're allowed to do something more profound, and you could set up a mechitza. So this is going to be an afkavita, not just with Chamtza Shal Nachri, but even Chamtza Shal Yisrael, if you want to achieve the ultimate level of Heker, then you will be able to set up a Mechitza. The only thing is the following, that if it's Chol HaMoed, I have a better idea. Don't set up a Mechitza, burn it. But But in the case of chametz shel nachri, I don't have that option because I don't own the chametz. I can't burn his chametz. So what I do is I do the most profound hecker I possibly can do, and that's to build a mechitza. However, vim shel hekdeshu, he has very similar to what we saw before in Rava. If this chametz belongs to hekdesh, it doesn't belong to the guy. Ein otzach, you don't have to make a mechitza. My timer, mivdal, Badil Inchi Mine. Because in the case of Hegdesh, we have a principle called Bedile Mine Inchi. Just give me one second here. I just want to read the Rashi. Chemso Shel Nachri, this is the first of the wide lines in Rashi. Hamufkad Etzlo Velo Kibel Olav Achrayis. So once again, we don't have an issue about Yerov HaYimotzi. The only issue is Shema Yavol Yachlo. It's Osala Machitza. Rashi gives the first example of Biar Basar. And what do you gain by putting up Machitza? It's a much more profound kind of Heker. Mishum Heker, that he should remind himself Shalom Yishkach V'yochlenu. By the way, where do we find this Halach of Heker? Elsewhere, where else do we find a mechitz of 10 tefachim high that sets up a heker? That's called a ruve chatzeros. Okay, so we put up something that's 10 tefachim high. There's something called a lechi, something called a korah, and that will remind you that it's not, you know, it's not your regular reshus harabim. Kli is a very temporary kind of thing. You put the bowl over, but somebody's going to come along, maybe one of your little children or grandchildren, come along and move the bowl. So therefore you should set up a mechitza. Hahu Diliel, if you ask about the sugya before, about Hamotzi Chometz Bebeso Beyontiv, it says, Kofal of Sakli, why are we relying on this very flimsy, temporary bandage, so to speak? Right? A band-aid that could be removed with such ease. Why don't we require setting up a mechitza? Says Rashi, Ahi Diliel lo efshal le b'mechitza. You're not allowed to put up a mechitza. Mishud chad yoma sa... Mishum chad yoma. Oh, I don't know, something went wrong here. Okay. Mishum chad yoma sagile b'kfias kli. But for one day, we can rely on kfias kli. Okay. Ubalaili of Aren. And at night, he'll destroy it. Yeah, Jerry, I'm sorry, you wanted
to... No, I just wanted to understand that you said in passing earlier today, a distinction between Eretz Yisrael and Kustaritz.
Right, and Eretz Yisrael, we're much more machmir about the possibility of a guy bringing in to'evol or toch be'secho, and therefore we don't allow any sort of spheres in Eretz Yisrael whatsoever. You don't rent any space to a guy, even for the sake of keeping his animals there, because we're always afraid that maybe he'll bring a getchke in there, and that's very severe in Eretz Yisrael. Chutz Laretz, it's a little bit more laid back, and we're going to allow spheres in the case of animals, but not in the case of human beings. And the reason is because he'll bring in his avodah zara, and even though you designated an area for him, nevertheless, schirus lo kanya, and it still remains your bias. So again, let's just review. I found chametz. Here are the rules. Rule number one is, if I found chametz, the best thing to do to avoid achila, if there's no bal yerov hayimotzi issue, would be to make a mechitza. If I don't have the option of making mechitza, for example, I found chametz on Pesach, then kofal avos hakli. Kofal avos hakli is a separate heter that they allowed you, says Tosin in the second answer, for the sake of avoiding the possibility of forgetting and eating it. Even though it's a very, very flimsy and temporary kind of protection, the kli will move from one place to the other, somebody will remove it, but nevertheless, for the day of Yontif, that's sufficient. If it wasn't Yontif, then we require you to do something much more profound and really set up a heker, which is called a mechitza of Yud Tvachim, for the sake of avoiding any possibility of coming to eat it. Then we made a distinction between chametz shel hekdesh, as opposed to regular chametz. In Hegdesh, we don't need kofel of a sakli, because here we have the principle called Mivdal In the case of Chavetz Shel Nachri, Rashi says that you want to keep the Chavetz of the Nachri in your Rishus for the entire Pesach. What about Shema Yishkach? There's no Bayur Abay Matzeh because it belongs to the guy you didn't accept a Chrayis. Then you have to go the full 9 yards, you have to do the most profound Heker, and that means you have to set up a Mechitza of Yud Foch. Now, Rabosa, we come to the part of Bedikas Chavetz that perhaps is most relevant, especially in contemporary life. People who go away from their homes and they're not going to be available on the 14th of Nisan to implement Bedika. Omer Rabbi Yehuda bar Rav, HaMefaresh VaYotze B'Shayara. He leaves his house. Mefaresh means he goes down to the sea. You know, he's on a sea voyage. And does he have to do Bedika? Again, if he, let's assume for the time being, I mean, we'll get into all the different possible scenarios, but let's assume he's not coming back on time to do Bedika. So here's the deal. Says Rabbi Yehuda bar Rav, when is he leaving his house? Kodem Shloshim Yom. If he's leaving before, let's say, Purim, right? He's leaving before Purim, his house. Is Eino Zokuk Levayer. Again, he still has a Bal Yoreh Bayim Matzeh problem because he owns the chametz, but let him do bittel, or alternatively, maybe he'll sell his chametz to a guy. So he doesn't have an ownership problem of Bal Yoreh Bayim Matzeh, but he's a problem of bedika. Chazal want you to get rid of your chametz, but he's not there on time to get rid of his chametz. So they alleviated him of his responsibility to leave, to do bedika and to allow him to leave his chametz, but only on one condition. He left when? Before Purim, before 30 days before Pesach, Tov Shloshim Yom. But once he passes Purim and he's within the 30-day period, then Zokuk Levayer, he's required to do Bir. And before he goes out on his pathway, he's going to have to do Bedika. Now, what is the nature of that Bedika within the 30-day period? Is it exactly the same as Bedika on the night of the 14th? Or it's a facsimile, it's a different kind of bedika. For example, would it require Lila, Dafket night? Does it require Or HaNer, with the light of a candle? Would you make a brach on such a bedika? There are many different issues as to how to define that bedika, which took place before the 14th, within the 30-day period, before the 14th of Nisan.
Now, do both of these assume he's not coming back?
So that's Abaye. Omer Abaye, Hadi Amitosh Shloshim Yom Zoku Levayer. And again, it's a little bit tricky here because, Steve, whatever you see here in Abaye now is going to be rejected. But so I just wanted you to keep your, you know, keep your. So, you know, you read Abaye and you get very excited because Abai says that this whole halach that requires bedika within 30 days, lo amorim, it only applies elishadaito lachzar. We're afraid he's going to land and return on Pesach, which is already too late to do bedika. I mean, he can do bedika to cover himself for the last couple of days of Pesach, but he's already messed up on the first part of Pesach. Amal name daito lachzar, if he left his house before the Shas Chovoso, meaning earlier than Yudalit, and he has no intention whatsoever of returning on Pesach itself, Ein Zokuk Levayer. So according to Abaye, it comes out that there are two conditions to require Bedika. Number one, you have to have a situation where you're leaving the house within 30 days. And number two, you're leaving with the intention of returning on Pesach. If one of the or the other of those two conditions are not checked off, i.e. he's either leaving his house before 30 days, or he's leaving his house within 30 days, but he has full intention of remaining outside of his house for the entire balance of Pesach. In those two scenarios, he doesn't have to do Bedika. Now, wait a second. Let's just analyze this for a second before we see Rava pouncing on Abaye. Ribbono Shalom. According to Abaye, if you leave your house before 30 days, you're not chayav in Bedika. When are you planning to arrive, to return?
On Pesach.
This is wild. The man is coming back. He has a scheduled flight. He's landing on Chol HaMoed Pesach back at home in Yerushalayim. And he didn't do a bedika. Why didn't he do a bedika? Because he left a month before Pesach. That's wild. See, if Abaye would have told me that, okay, look, you're not coming back on Pesach. That's your intention. You know, your flight lands the Isru Chag of Pesach. Now you want to know, are you chayiv in bedika or not? So the question is, when you left, when you didn't leave. But Abai is now saying that if you left with the intention of not returning on Pesach, then for sure you're not chayiv in bedika, no matter when you left your house. And the halach of Shloshim Yom applies even if you intend to come back on Pesach. If you intend to come back on Pesach, if I couldn't care less if you left on Rosh Hashanah, you'd have to do a bedika, because you're going to arrive on Chol HaMoed Pesach and your house is full of chametz. This is a pella, this Abai, and we have to really analyze this. Amalei Rava, Rava objects. He says, "Idaito lachzar." If you're telling me that he intends to come back, because again, Abai says, "Lo Amaran," we only said that this 30-day period, that within that 30-day you chayv to bedikas, because it's daito lachzar, is afilu mi Rosh Hashanah nami. He left on Rosh Hashanah from his house. He's got to worry about bedikas chametz. You know, it's almost as if Abai is commiserating, you know, he's on a psychological level. You're leaving your house on Rosh Hashanah, like the last thing in your mind on Erev Rosh Hashanah is Bedikas Chametz. You know, if you're within 30 days, you know, we can expect you to be aware of Bedikas Chametz. You're cleaning your house for Pesach, you have to learn the laws of Pesach, you're learning Mishnah Berurah with Rabbi Berzon on a daily basis, the longer laws of Pesach. You know, that I can understand. But you're leaving on Rosh Hashanah, says Abaye, Likmir and Zinin, do I have it in my mind? You know, Bedikas Chametz, it's too far removed. But Rava can't tolerate that. Rava says that that's your responsibility. You cannot expose yourself to the threat or the danger of being in your house on Pesach without Bedika. You know that you're coming back on Pesach. You've already scheduled the flights. How can you land on Pesach with a house that's not Baduk? It just doesn't make any sense. Elama Rava, so Rava substitutes the following interpretation of this brisa. Ha di amrit kodim shloshim yom ein zokuk levayer lo amar and elisha ein daito lachzor. When do we differentiate between before 30 days he checked out or within 30 days? That's because he has no intention of returning home on Pesach. And now, if you want to exempt a person from bir chametz, from bdikas chametz, so you fulfill two conditions. Number one, he's not planning to return on Pesach. Number two, he left 30 days plus before Pesach. Havel daito lachzar. But if you don't have that first condition of not intending to be there on Pesach, but on the contrary, you intend to return on Pesach, then forget about shloshim yom. This distinction between 30 days and before or after doesn't make any sense. Is afilu b'Rosh Hashanah Zokuk Levayer. The Azda Rava Litameh, and this is Rava, who's consistent with another statement that he made, and he said the following. Omar Rava, Ha'ose Beso Otsar. A man decides, let's say he's a farmer, and he decides to designate his house as a, in Israeli, in modern Hebrew, we call it a machsan. How would you say it in English? A storage room. So he makes his house into a storage room. Now, once he makes his house into a storage room, he's going to pile up, you know, one pile on top of another pile of stuff. Let's say he's got bales of hay or whatever he has. Now, it's true that underneath these bales of hay, you know, might be buried some chametz. But now the question is, does he have to remove, when it comes to Erev Pesach, you know, Leil Yudal, does he have to remove all these bales of hay or whatever produce he has stored here in this machsan in order to do the bedikah on the karkois of the otsar, on the bottom floor of the otsar? So the Rava says the following, Kodim Shloshim Yom, if he made it into a machsan more than 30 days before. So on Erev Purim, he converted his house into a machsan, and he stores stuff there. And you and I know that in contemporary life, this is very relevant. We don't store necessarily produce and hay, but we have all sorts of boxes and stuff that we store away. So he places boxes and boxes of stuff, and underneath is what used to be serving as the floor of his house, and there's probably chametz there, or there might be chametz there. But Rava says, you know what? If he did this already before 30 days, then you know what? His chametz is buried.
putting the stuff in there or converting it?
Right. In other words, 30 days before Pesach, he put the stuff in, so he already buried the chametz. This is going to be a sugya that we're going to get to later called chametz shenaflal of mapolis, that a whole debris fell on chametz and buried the chametz. You know, there was like an avalanche of chametz, of stuff on top of your chametz. So, you know, we're not going to force him to remove this whole avalanche of stuff and remove all of his boxes and make a bedika. Why? Because he's already put these boxes on before 30 days. It sounds like the entity of chametz as a halachic entity, as far as the mind is concerned, only emerges within the 30-day period. So as far as 31 days is concerned, you know, you don't have in your mindset that this is chametz. It's not chametz. And therefore you wanted to store things. We're not going to now penalize you and force you to remove all that in order to do a bedikah. But within 30 days, that's a whole different story. Tov shloshim yom, zokuk levara. And he can't fool himself and say, you know what, I'm going to deliberately bury my chametz. No, once it's within 30 days, you can't bury your chametz. You're chayev in bedikah. So first do the bedikah, and then put all your boxes and storage inside that place. So the Gemara says, v'kodem shloshim yom nami. And even, Rava adds, even before 30 days, 31 days before, now you want to, you know, technically you're allowed to bury your chametz with these boxes. Lo amar el shein dai to lefanoso. It's only because he's going to leave these boxes there, and he has no das, no intention, lefanoso, meaning to remove them. Yeah, it's so interesting that the word lefanoso appears in the Gemara, because in modern Hebrew it's a very common word, lefanoto, right, to remove something. Avol daito lefanoso, you know, who are you fooling now? You're burying the chametz, and you're saying to me, well, it's before 30 days, it's 31 days before the Chag, and I'm allowed to do that. But you yourself know full well that your plan is to use it as an otzar for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but before Pesach you're going to clean out all the boxes or the bales of hay. Is then afilu kodem shloshim yom nami zokuk levayar. He cannot, within the daito lachzar period, here it's daito lefanoso, you know, it's within the framework of his intention to replace the situation as it existed prior to this aso matzah, then forget it. Then you surely have to do bedika. And that would apply even from Rosh Hashanah. So it's Rosh Hashanah, and I am burying my chametz by turning my house into a storehouse for boxes upon boxes of stuff. Before I do that, I have to do bedika. Why? Because my intention is to move the stuff out. I'm going to call in the sabalim, all the workers, the schleppers, before Pesach. Don, I'll be with you in just 1 second. I don't want to keep you too long, and I'm going to answer your question, but officially, this is where we got to today. Hani shloshim yom maya vidite, if you could please make a note of it. And we're talking about this number 30. The Gemara wants to know, you know, this whole mentality that I have to worry about my bedika 30 days before the Chag, where does it come from? Where does the number 30 come from? Is it just arbitrary, or it comes somewhere from the universe of Hilchus Pesach, that that this 30-day period before Pesach is like the overflow, mushroom overflow of Pesach? Okay, so that's where we're stopping now.
Sure. It probably answers itself. It sounds obvious. You have a storage room, right? Normally it's a storage room. But for some reason, extra company's coming, whatever it is, you want to put the kids down in the storage room, make it into a bedroom, so you know that you're going to clear it out, say, a week before Pesach.
Oh, this was all planned out. Okay. Yeah, so I thought you were going to ask me what happens if I didn't plan it.
No, so there's two things. So presumably, you have to do bedikah because you're... The other one would be is someone suddenly shows up during Chol HaMoed.
That's a fascinating question. What happens if relying on Rava's structure, and I had no intention of it wasn't planned on my calendar that I'm going to remove the stuff, and it was 30 days plus before Pesach. I didn't have to do bedikah. I asked my Rebbe Rava, and Rava said to me, you don't have to do bedikah. And then lo and behold, guests show up from Alaska, you know, and now I don't know where to put them. Yeah, you know, because I've made my house into a beis otzar. So Don is asking, what do I do in that case? Now, I would assume the following. If they come before Pesach, that's not your case, but I'm just saying, let's cover all the easy cases before we get to your case, which is a lot of tougher cases. then do the bedikah before they come. Meaning, we gave you a conditional p'tur of bedikah. That was conditional on the fact that it remains a beis osar. Now, lo and behold, right? Because again, even if it's before 30 days, even if it's Rosh Hashanah, I'm only going to allow you and alleviate you from the responsibility of Dika because the condition is that you have no intention of being mefana the otzar before. So if you showed up, look, man, you didn't live up to the conditions of the deal. The conditions of the deal were that you're not going to use this area as anything other than a base otzar. Now basically you're going back to a situation where it's not a base otzar. So that's okay if they show up on Erev Pesach. But now they show up on Pesach. So I don't know what to do here. You know, I'm going to do a bedikah.
So that is Chol HaMoed.
Like they show up on Chol HaMoed. So again, I'm just going to give you my intuition here. We'd have to look this up in the poskim. It's a very interesting question. But I would say the following. That Bal Yerovah Yimatzi Yakovel. Why? Because you did bid. It's a little bit tricky. Because bittul usually is attached to what? To bedikah. Here he didn't do a bedikah, so we gotta knock this over his head. You know, take a frying pan and hit him over the head and remind him to do bittul. And that's a very interesting philosophy here, because what both Abai and Rav are in agreement that there are situations in which I'm not going to be chayiv in bedikah. According to Abaye, it goes as far as anybody leaving the house before you dial with intention of not coming back. And even if I intend to come back, if it's before 30 days of going to buy, I don't have to do bedikah. Now, Rava cuts it down severely, but even Rava recognizes the possibility that if I leave 30 days before with no intention of coming back, or in the Beis Otzar, no intention of being fine, I'm not chayiv in bedikah. So what's going to do with Bal Yerovah Yimatzi? Imagine I have a house that I use for chametz the whole year round, or at least up to Rosh Hashanah, and this chametz there, presumably, I'm not doing bedikah because I'm part of bedikah. What's going to be? I have Bal Yerovah Yimatzi, I own chametz. So here I would say, we have to hit you over the head and tell you, you better do bittul. It's a little bit problematic because Chazal were very worried about leaving bittul in luftarayim, you know, floating in the space. They wanted to attach bittul to bedikah, which is what we do. We finish the bedikah, then the first thing we do is we read the bittul. That's a reminder, but here we don't have that reminder. Okay, that's issue number one. We got to clear our way for Bal Yerovah Yimatzi, insist that he does bedikah. Now you have another issue, bedikah. So I would say the following. Truth is that you are potter from bedikah up until a certain point. It's not what you call igloy milsum afreya, that now retroactively I found out that there was a whole mistake in the deal and I never should have alleviated you from your chiyuv bedikah because in fact you are being mefana the beis otzar. No. I'm going to rely on your honesty. You had no intention of being mefana the beis otzar, and therefore I alleviated you the chiyuv bedikah. Now the score has changed. Why? Because now you are being mefana the beis otzar. We're going to allow you to be mefana the beis otzar, but the first thing you have to do after you take out those boxes is bedikah. And I'm even inclined to think that in this case we're going to go the full 9 yards. You're going to have to do bedikah by night. You're going to have to do the bedikah with an Ar HaNer, and you're going to have to make a bracha on that bedikah.
During
Chol HaMoed. And this is going to be a Mishnah later on in that parak. What happens if a person forgot to do the bedikah? And the law is that he has to do bedikah during Yom Tov. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that. Okay, then, everyone, gentlemen, have a great day.